morning, everyone, and welcome to this session of Marxism 2018. This is a session introduced by Rick Kuhn on debates on about anti-Semitism in the 21st century. So just to introduce Rick, he's a long-term socialist, a long-term member of Socialist Alternative. He's spent many years as a Palestine Solidarity activist. He's a historian of Jewish social organisation in Eastern Europe, and, of course, an author of numerous works, including the Deutsche Prize-winning biography of Heinrich Grossmann, which you can get at our bookstore, I believe.
Up to lunchtime, yeah.
Up to lunchtime, yeah. Talk more about that later. Okay, so usual drill, Rick will speak for a while.
A while, yeah.
And then we'll have time for questions and discussions. So take it away, Rick.
Well, if you've been able to distract yourself from the fascinating activities of the Marxism conference and look at the latest news, there have been three significant developments in the last few days that seem to have been designed to encourage attendance at this talk. There has been the campaign against Jeremy Corbyn over his alleged anti-Semitism. There has been the expulsion of Jean-Luc Mélenchon from a march in honour of a Holocaust survivor who was murdered, apparently on an anti-Semitic basis. Mélenchon also expelled from the demonstration on the basis that he allegedly was an anti-Semite. And then, just in the last day or so, we've had the murder of 17 or even more Palestinians in Gaza by the Israeli armed forces. Arguments that immigrants with different cultures and beliefs are undermining the living standards, access to jobs, housing and social services of local people, abuse and violence on the streets, firebombing of places of worship, discriminatory immigration policies and policing, what we call profiling, rules about the clothing of those supposedly alien elements. What are we talking about here? Is this the treatment of Jews in Germany in the 1920s with violence intensifying under the Nazis in the 1930s? Yes, it certainly is. It's also the treatment of Muslims in France and Germany and other countries today, including, to some extent, Australia as well. Debates over anti-Semitism today cannot be understood outside that context, the context of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia and Israel's place in global capitalism. There are, I think, two ways of understanding anti-Semitism, or two varieties of anti-Semitism. And in a totally neutral way, I will call these real anti-Semitism and alleged anti-Semitism, which is equated with anti-Zionism. That is, identifying criticism of the existence of the apartheid state of Israel with anti-Semitism. Real anti-Semitism really only emerged in the late 19th century, which isn't to say that there wasn't hostility to Jews, we might call it Judeophobia, going back a very, very long way in history. But from the second half of the 19th century, this took the form not of hostility to the beliefs of the Christ killers, as the Christian churches so delicately put it, but a form of racism. Jews as a race, not just adherents of a particular religious creed. Anti-Semitism emerged as a tool of reactionaries trying to build mass support when the advance of European capitalism was opening up politics to mass participation in Europe. It was no longer enough just to rely on the divine right of kings and police states, although both of those continued well into the 20th century. There was a need to also provide ideas that justified the way the world was organised at present, and especially to divert attention away from alternative ideas and particularly socialist ideas that could constitute a challenge. Particularly in Eastern and Central Europe, but also further west, anti-Semitic racism provided an explanation of why the lives of ordinary people were crap and a means of mobilising support. The problem wasn't capitalism, undemocratic monarchies, or vicious landowners. The problem was Jews, who were a large and already and a readily identifiable minority, at least in much of Eastern Europe. Anti-Semitism continues today. It still functions in essentially the same fashion as a diversion. In Hungary, Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's Fidesz campaign against George Soros, the Hungarian US philanthropist who has provided funding for various liberal causes in Hungary and also in other countries, that campaign has used various anti-Semitic tropes, caricatures. The Jewish Hungarian... in Poland, there was recently passed a law, the Polish concentration camp law, that said that any suggestion that the Polish nation, undefined, was involved in the Holocaust was a prosecutable offence. This could mean saying that there were Polish collaborators with the Nazis, that there were Poles who turned in Jews to the Nazis, that you could be prosecuted for. Not that all Poles did it, but the ambiguity of the legislation suggests that even talking about this historical truth could subject you to prosecution. The continuities between racist and fascist traditions in mainstream politics are most evident in Austria, where student fraternities, which include graduates of high schools and universities with a German nationalist and fascist tradition, Burschenschaften, today form the core cadre of the Freedom Party of Austria, which is the junior party in the coalition government in Austria. Politicians from what is now the largest opposition party in Germany, Alternative für Deutschland, the Alternative for Germany, have attacked references to Nazi crimes, including plaques on footpaths that commemorate Hitler's victims. In Germany, there were almost 1,500 anti-Semitic crimes last year. The culprits were overwhelmingly on the German right. In Greece, the fascist, well, not simply fascist, the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn organisation, a substantial organisation, has a hard anti-Semitic line. In Russia, just recently, in the last couple of weeks, I've been adding to this as events develop, Vladimir Putin suggested that if there was interference in US elections, it probably came not from Russians, but from Ukrainians, Tatars or Jews who might have Russian citizenship. Since the Holocaust, Jews have been a small minority, less than 1%, in the countries of Eastern Europe, somewhat greater in Russia. But anti-Semitism is more widespread than that. Particularly in the Arab and Muslim worlds, anti-Semitism often arises from taking Zionist and Israeli propaganda about the identity of Judaism and Zionism at face value. And in that sense, saying that Judaism is the same as Zionism, to be a real Jew, you have to support the existence of a racially defined state for Jews, that in fact encourages anti-Semitism. It encourages people who hate Israel, and I think there are excellent reasons for that, to hate Jews as well. So I've talked about where anti-Semitism comes from. The origins of Islamophobia are not radically different. there are real parallels with the origins of anti-Semitism. And the consequences for the targets of these racist ideas and worse than racist ideas, these racist practices, have been very similar. And Islamophobia has been promoted by ruling classes through government statements and actions, and also through the mass media. A study by the One Path Network in Australia found 2,891 articles are the absolutely overwhelming majority in the Murdoch press that mentioned Islam were critical of Islam. Islamophobia serves as a domestic diversion of blame, diverting attention from the real sources of social problems generated by capitalism, unemployment, low wages, expensive housing, inadequate social services, public transport. All of these things can be blamed on migrants, especially if they're Muslim and non-white. Islamophobia can also act as a domestic red herring, especially associated with that friend of the right, Law and Order. You're familiar with her? Law and Order, in order to distract attention from these problems. And one of the first practitioners of this approach was, in fact, Labor Premier Bob Carr in New South Wales during the late 1990s. Most recently, those of you who are inhabitants of this fair city will be familiar with the hysteria about Somali gangs hyped up by the Liberals, both locally and at the national level. Islamophobia has also served imperial purposes in a way that anti-Semitism didn't particularly. Islamophobia, over a long period of time, has provided a justification for colonial imperialism and, more recently, for Western military interventions in the Arab and Muslim worlds, military interventions that continue at present. And this imperialist use of Islamophobia intersects with the role played by Israel as a really important ally of imperialist interests in the Middle East, where the Arab states are not entirely reliable allies, largely because of the hostility of the Arab masses to their own regimes and to US imperialism. Israel is a rock-solid ally of the United States in particular. Not to say that the Israeli governments always do exactly what the United States wants, still less that the United States always does what Israel wants, but rather they have common mutual interests. Equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism has been a smear used by defenders of the apartheid state of Israel. You might remember last December the campaign against the New Zealand singer Lord. This is an advertisement that was placed in the Washington Post on the last day of last year. And the reason why Lord could be described as a bigot, and there's stuff about anti-Semitism in the small print as well, was that she had cancelled a gig in Israel in response to people pointing out to her the nature of the Israeli regime. The justification for equating anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism is grounded in definitional shenanigans. The Merriam-Webster's third new international dictionary, the standard dictionary in the United States, has since 1961 defined anti-Semitism as, one, hostility to Jews as a religious or racial minority, often accompanied by social, economic and political discrimination. No worries. Two, opposition to Zionism, a sympathy with opponents of the state of Israel. more recently, because, you know, that's just the dictionary. Lots of people don't look in dictionaries. It's not overtly political. It has some authority. But more recently, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, made up of representatives of 31 national governments, including the United States and most of the European Union, Australia is in the process of joining this organisation, has since 2016 defined anti-Semitism as including claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavour. The European Union's Parliament adopted this definition in 2016. So, a series of governments and intergovernmental bodies have seen it as in their interests to equate Zionism and anti-Semitism. And they do so because of their backing of the state of Israel. Now, it is certainly true that anti-Zionism can be and has been a cover for anti-Semitism. This was certainly the case in Stalin's Russia, especially after his military and diplomatic support for the foundation of Israel, did you know about that, was not rewarded by the new state's loyalty to Russia. The late 1940s and the early 1950s saw anti-Semitic campaigns and purges in Russia and its satellites in Eastern Europe. Golden Dawn, which I mentioned before, is vehemently anti-Semitic and vehemently hostile to Israel. But attributing evil characteristics to all Jews is very far from being a necessary corollary of criticism of the racist structure and actions of the Israeli state. While a large proportion of Jews around the world are Zionists, though the proportion is declining, all Jews are far from being Zionists, and what's more, most Zionists are not Jews. Most Zionists are Christian fundamentalists and pragmatic practitioners of Western diplomacy and those who support that diplomacy. Jews who regard Israel as a racist state are a problem for this perspective, but, you know, that can be solved by declaring that people such as me, and I see some other people in the room, we're self-hating, suffering from severe personality defects. Now, it may be the case that I suffer from personality defects, but hating myself because I have a Jewish background is not one of them. No, I'm an atheist, but I'm actually proud of my Jewish antecedents and particularly proud of a Jewish socialist tradition that goes back well into the 19th century. So the argument about self-hating Jews is, well, you can't take them seriously because, you know. There is a fundamentally right-wing logic of equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. And, in fact, this logic has left former Social Democrats and people further to the left into apologetics for Israel and participation against leftist critics of Israel and apologetics for Western imperialist interventions in the Middle East. I've got a number of examples, but the most virulent one, which I will tell you about, is the anti-Deutsch current in Germany, the anti-German current in Germany, largely made up of former Maoists who think that Germany is so bad that and is so responsible for the Holocaust, that is everybody in Germany. You know, we discount the communists, we discount the social democrats, we discount the others who resisted the Nazis. Germans are so responsible for anti-Semitism that they have a responsibility for fighting against anti-Semitism in not just the real sense, but also in the alleged anti-Semitism sense of criticism of Israel criticism of the existence of a Jewish state. I want to say something very brief about the history of Zionism and Israel. I suspect that my assertions earlier on have by and large been met with some agreement, but I'll hammer the point home. To understand alleged anti-Semitism, it's necessary to look at the history of Zionism and Israel. There has always been a level of agreement between political Zionists and anti-Semites. And the rock bottom of that agreement is that Jews and non-Jews cannot live together. There is always bound to be friction, and on the part of the Zionists, that friction will inevitably lead to persecution of Jews. Some Zionists have gone so far as to collaborate with fascists, with anti-Semites. So there was a transfer agreement between the Nazi regime and the Zionist Anglo-Palestinian Bank between 1933 and 1939. It allocated a proportion of the funds of wealthy Jews leaving Germany to purchase German goods for the Jewish colony in Palestine. This undermined the efforts of other Zionists. I'm not saying that all Zionists have collaborated with Nazis. This undermined the efforts of other Zionists and also Jewish organisations in the United States to impose an international boycott on Germany over its treatment of Jews. Even more outrageous was Rudolf Kastner, a leading Zionist in Budapest's collaboration with the Nazis in 1944. He did a deal with Adolf Eichmann of the SS. In return for valuables and silence about the plans to exterminate Hungarian Jewry, a train load of people, mainly picked by Kastner and mainly very well-off people, was transported to Switzerland rather than to Auschwitz to be killed. In Israel, Kastner, after the war, was a senior official in the Department of Trade until some people, outraged by his collaboration, assassinated him. Back to Austria. Karl-Heinz Strache, who is the Deputy Prime Minister of Austria and the leader of the fascist and carefully anti-Semitic Freedom Party, was invited to Israel in 2017 by the ruling party, Benjamin Netanyahu's party, Likud, in order to meet with people and engage in discussions. Israel is fundamentally an apartheid state, where Jewishness is essentially a matter of hereditary and conversion is extremely difficult. Zionism is a form of racism. If any other country in the world said, well, you can only be a full citizen of this country if you are from the right race, then it would be straightforward to describe this as racism. But that's essentially the case with Israel. Except for those who are anti-Zionist Jews, Jews from anywhere in the world can go to Israel. I'm not counting on my options here. Can go to Israel and become citizens straight away. On the other hand, Palestinians who have lived in historic Palestine for many generations, most of whom are probably more direct descendants of the Jews of the ancient world than the Ashkenazi Jews of Europe, like me, they can't go back to their homes. They or their parents expelled in 1948 or subsequently are not allowed back to their land, most of which has been taken away from them. Israel has discriminatory policies discriminating against Palestinians in the realms of housing, ownership of land, jobs, social services, the use of language, and that's just in Israel proper. We're not talking there about the military and settler repression and murder of Palestinians in the occupied territories of the West Bank, where settler activity, colonisation by armed settlers is going on at a rapid pace still, and in Gaza, which was evacuated of Jewish settlers, so it could become a free fire zone, and we saw that free fire activity just yesterday with many hundreds of people being wounded and at least 17 being killed, unarmed protesters against their exclusion from their traditional lands. The most infamous recent example, of course, is Ahed Tamimi, jailed. I must use American spelling. Jailed on the 19th of December last year because she slapped an Israeli soldier shortly after her cousin had been shot in the head by Israeli troops as Israeli soldiers were invading her home. So the cases of Israeli soldiers being prosecuted for cold-bloodedly murdering Palestinians are exceptionally few and far between. But Ahed has now been sentenced to 8 months in jail for slapping this Israeli soldier, and her mum has also been jailed because she videoed the incident and put it onto social media. What an outrage. The slander of anti-Semitism has been used very broadly against Palestinian solidarity activists and organisations. So there was the sacking of Stephen Salaita, a Palestinian academic in the United States, by the University of Illinois for tweeting criticisms of Israel. There was, much closer to home, the disaffiliation of Socialist Alternatives Club at Monash University in 2014 for keeping out of a meeting about Palestine Zionist disruptors where the speaker was Jewish. There was a legal case in 2013-14 against Jake Lynch, an academic at Sydney University, under the Australian Racial Discrimination Act for encouraging artists not to perform in Israel and his refusal to endorse a fellowship application by an Israeli academic. This was part of an international strategy by an Israeli organisation to persecute people who were critical of Israel by legal means. The term lawfare, I think, was coined for this purpose. I haven't heard it before that. Eventually, that case was dismissed, but there was a further case against Jake Lynch at Sydney University on trumped-up charges of anti-Semitism in 2015. We have the attacks on Lord for cancelling a concert in Israel, and the guy who... I don't know if you can see it, but here, Rabbi Shmuley Botich, not sure about the pronunciation there, who... I think he's not just the executive director of this campaign to defend Israel and promote human rights. I think he essentially is it. He is somebody who has defended Steve Bannon against accusations of anti-Semitism. And more recently, we've seen weaponised alleged anti-Semitism used against Corbyn and Melanchthon, not directly related to the issue of Israel, especially in the case of Corbyn, but rather used as a means of undermining his position as the leader of the British Labour Party. Any smear will do. The accusation that Corbyn, who has been a long-term anti-fascist, not just in words but also in deeds, that he is an anti-Semite and tolerates anti-Semitism is just ridiculous. And that campaign, which began as an attempt to purge the Labour Party of Corbyn supporters by suspending them or expelling them because they were supposedly anti-Semites, also led to the suspension or expulsion of Jewish anti-Zionist campaigners, such as Moshe Mahova, Tony Greenstein, and Jackie Walker. In Australia, anti-Semitism exists, but is an essentially marginal phenomenon, confined to the very far right and nutty individuals. Jews in Australia don't suffer from systematic discrimination by the Australian state. That is not true of the experience of Muslims. Islamophobia is widespread, promoted by governments, mainstream parties, and most mass media organisations. Muslims are subject to violence on the streets and surveillance by the state. Anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and Zionism intersect in a number of different ways. We have bigotry doubled. Many fascists and others on the far right propagate both anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. That's bigotry doubled one. Then there's bigotry doubled two, Islamophobia and Zionism. Many Zionists promote Islamophobia in the name of fighting anti-Semitism, which they routinely equate with criticism of Israel. Racist policies of the Israeli government in Israel proper and the occupied territories and the foreign policy of Israel is essentially Islamophobia. There's a natural affinity with Islamophobic right-wing forces in allied countries, an affinity between the Israeli government and Islamophobic forces in the United States. Hence, the love affair between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. Last year, Netanyahu distanced himself and his government from the Hungarian government's anti-Semitic attacks on George Soros because George Soros is critical of some of the Israeli government's policies. But, funnily enough, Netanyahu did not criticise Trump's failure, and it is a stunning achievement, his failure to mention anti-Semitism or Jews in his Holocaust Day remembrance statement last year. That created such outrage that there has been a mention in his most recent Holocaust Remembrance Day speech. There's also right-wing non-Jewish Zionism, especially Christian fundamentalist Zionism, associated, which is the position of people who really don't like Jews. They think that the Second Coming is pretty nigh, but in order for it to occur, the Jews should be reassembled in Jerusalem and in Palestine as a preliminary to the Second Coming. And there the Jews will either convert or they'll be destroyed in a war. You know, real sympathy with the plight of Jewish people there. So on this basis, one of the biggest sources of funding for Jews returning to Israel is, in fact, Christian Zionists in the United States. Now we have the big three: Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and Zionism all combined. Now, I don't intend to try and get into the heads of the people who do these things. Contradictory ideas can exist in people's heads, and in fact, I know that they exist in my head, and I suspect unless you are a computer in some sort of human guise, they may exist in your head. So I'm not going to try and deal with the psychology here. But these things are combined. Richard Spencer, who for a while at least was the principal figurehead of fascism in the United States, you may have seen the video in which somebody tapped him in the face with their fist. He calls himself a white Zionist. That's far from being an isolated case of what's been called Jew washing, using an association with an individual Jew or Israel to cover racism and also anti-Semitism. I've also already talked about Strache in Germany. The Alternative for Germany is a strong supporter of Israel. The deputy leader of the parliamentary faction of the Alternative for Germany, Beatrix von Storch, has stated that Israel's approach to Jewish culture and traditions mirrors her own party's promotion of Germans. In France too, Marine Le Pen, the leader of the fascist Front National, National Front, has tried to balance her party's historical baggage of Holocaust denial and overt anti-Semitism with pro-Israeli statements. In Hungary, meanwhile, Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has been vocal in his admiration of Israel while using overtly anti-Semitic imagery in his advertising. And the third largest party in Hungary, which is a neo-Nazi street boot boy organisation called Jobbik, publicly has renounced anti-Semitism and embraced Zionism in a clear case of Jew-washing in order, at least for the time being, to concentrate its racism on Muslims and Roman Sinti, on Gypsy people. The leader of Poland's ruling Law and Justice Party, which introduced the Polish concentration camps law, Jarosław Kaczynski, has praised Israel on various occasions. In the United States, Breitbart, the news organisation headed by Steve Bannon, regularly traffics in anti-Semitic dog whistling while at the same time pledging support for Israel. The National Rifle Association likes Israel's policy on guns, but has recently dog whistled anti-Semitic ideas by denouncing a list of people who supported greater gun control, all of whom, by coincidence, happen to be Jewish. Likewise, President Trump makes pro-Israeli statements while flirting with anti-Semitic imagery and apologising for rampaging fascists in Charlottesville, North Carolina, and also publicising the website of Britain First fascist organisation. The Israeli government and some Zionists have been prepared to work with the far right. Several Jewish billionaires have been funding the Friends of Israel initiative, which wants to engage with the alt-right because, and I quote here, anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism are far from being an obvious problem in movements of the right. It is our duty to promote among them the important role Israel, before the challenges that Western civilization must overcome. There are reasons for mutual understanding, and above all, it is necessary for these parties to purge their anti-Israeli past and motivation. So here it's very clear that Zionism trumps anti-Semitism. That, no pun intended. That is, that if you are a Zionist, then you can be forgiven anti-Semitism. What drives, and this is a further quote, what drives anti-Semitism in Europe and the West at large is attributable more to the far left and Islamism than the right. You may be interested to learn that John Howard is a founder member of this organisation. There are also Jews inside Israel and outside Israel, Jewish Zionists inside and outside Israel, who are fascists. And again, the example of an example from Melbourne of Avi Yemeni, a muscle-bound Jewish gym owner and street thug, proud of his service in the Israeli army and a virulent fascist Islamophobe. Well, the question now arises, well, what do you do? And I read yesterday, because somebody had foolishly posted an article from The Guardian by that twit Owen Jones about the problems inside the British Labour Party. And Owen Jones, who for a considerable period sunk the boot into Jeremy Corbyn, seeing that Jeremy Corbyn wasn't going to go, has become more sympathetic. And he has generously offered his views about dealing with the anti-Semitism problem inside the British Labour Party, which is more education. What we've got to do is educate people about the difference between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, which, as far as it goes, is okay, but far more important than writing screeds in The Guardian is mobilising against anti-Semitism in the way in which most of the far left has done in most of the world for a prolonged period of time. Mobilising against anti-Semitism, trying to isolate and shut down fascists who promote anti-Semitism. But in fighting anti-Semitism, we have to realise that it is a symptom of a class-divided society, a tool in the hands of our rulers and those who want to be our rulers, and that Islamophobia is the same kind of tool. And that if we're opposed to anti-Semitism, then we should be opposed to all forms of racism. If we want to consistently undermine anti-Semitism, we have to attack Islamophobia. And in Australia, that is, in particular, a responsibility of the left. Attacking Islamophobia, supporting the struggles of those who support the repression of the Palestinian people, these are the tasks, these are the practical tasks that confronts people who are hostile to racism.